it's easy for, you know, everyday stresses and things like that to get involved. You know, horses have along over the years have taught me just to be patient. You know, when things aren't quite perfect right this very second, don't make a big deal of it. Again, like I said earlier in the interview there, you know, like think about tomorrow. You know, how do I want this horse to be tomorrow? Do I want to overreact today and have the horse be stressed out tomorrow? Or do I want to be a little bit more understanding today, be a bit more patient, and have a hopefully a more understanding horse tomorrow?
There is a depth and a breadth to our lives that largely goes unexplored. As an equestrian life mindset coach and host of this podcast, I am here to lead you on that exploration. Deep conversations covering topics in and out of the show ring with industry leaders and unsung heroes alike, sharing their stories and what makes their journey unique, but relatable at the same time. We all have stories to share and lessons to trade, something we've learned from a horse or from each other. So relax and be ready to listen with more than just your ears. I'm Tracy Mitchell. Welcome to Hitting Your Stride. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Hitting Your Stride, the Equestrian Elements Life Coaching Podcast. I'm your host, Tracy Mitchell, and today we've got another amazing guest joining us. When I started out on this podcasting adventure about 18 months ago, I did so with the vision of it being a journey for anyone who is involved in the equestrian industry, no matter what their goals, experience, or discipline. Today's episode is a special one, and I'm excited about it. Caleb Klingen joins me on the show today. He's a multidiscipline horse trainer whose focus is starting young horses, particularly in the early days of their career. Caleb has helped lay the foundation for many horses over the years, and that has included horses whose careers are intended to be in the hunter, jumper, and dressage rings. Caleb's philosophy stems from the strong desire to keep the horse's perspective in mind with good horsemanship and understanding, and by doing so, creating a confident and willing partner no matter what type of saddle is on the horse's back. Along with the horse training, Caleb and his wife, Chelsea, also run Klingen Quarter Horses, where they breed, raise, and train quality quarter horses, primarily those that run barrels. They have traveled all over North America, competing at the highest levels, enjoying success along the way, and they feel really blessed to do so. Caleb's passion for horses is so evident in our conversation, and he believes that a passion for horses is something you can never truly master, but the journey includes continuing to learn more and also better ourselves, not just as equestrians, but as humans. So set aside your preconceived notions about English versus Western and settle in for a conversation that bridges both sides of the ring. I really enjoyed this conversation. I hope you do too. Well, hey, Caleb, thank you for joining me. Welcome to Hitting Your Stride.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's exciting to be here and always love a good opportunity to chat about horses and the things we love so much. So looking forward to it.
Okay, great. So yeah, as I mentioned in the intro, you and your wife, Chelsea, own and run Klingen Quarter Horses, and you also have a horse training business. So that's what I'm really looking to get in here is your work with the horses that you train, the way you communicate with them, et cetera. So to start off with the first question, how were you drawn into this line of work? And what is it about multidisciplinary training that really appeals to you?
For sure. That's a good question. You know, I guess how I was drawn into it, I've been riding horses and that, you know, I guess since I was about 8 years old. I didn't grow up in a family that had horses or anything. I'm a first generation horse trainer. But for some reason, when I was a kid, I always had a real passion for them. And so, I guess I'm kind of going way back here. We're going to go the long way around, but I had such a passion and, there was a friend of ours that had worked in a little, kind of like a pleasure lesson barn just up the road from us, and they got us in touch, and so I started taking lessons there. Again, we, you know, we didn't know anything about horses. You know, we were very green as it gets, you know, but as I started taking lessons, you know, I realized it wasn't just something I kind of wanted to do. It, you know, I really enjoyed this, and I didn't know how it would look or what direction it would take me, but I knew I'd be involved, you know, as a kid, I knew I'd be involved in this stuff, you know, for the rest of my life, if possible. And so as things developed, you know, we got into the barrel racing industry specifically, and I started competing a lot more. And then when I was old, I guess, you know, kind of middle of high school at 15, 16 year old age, I started, you know, training my own young horses. You know, we didn't have a whole lot of money to just buy whatever horse we wanted. You know, I was fortunate. We had good horses, but I had to work with them. And because I was kind of forced to take a horse and create it, you know, to be better, I realized, wow, you know, even more fun than competing and all the rest of it, you know, the feeling of accomplishing goals with a horse is just, to me anyways, is just overwhelming. You know, that's what I get the biggest kick out of, is just, you know, taking a horse and having a goal with that horse and accomplishing it. And so very quickly I realized, you know, I wanted to train horses. And, you know, just as a young guy, that's kind of how it started. And so I started, you know, it wasn't long, and people were sending me some young horses to start, you know, their first 30, 60, 90 days. And I realized I liked that part of it the most, which is kind of rare, because that's usually everyone's least favorite part. But yeah, so that's what drew me into it. And I guess, you know, like I said, at the time I was mostly involved with barrel horses, and we still are very heavily involved in the barrel horse industry. We breed, raise, and train, you know, a lot of good barrel horses. But as far as, you know, my training business, it's mostly built around that, you know, in the Western world, we call it colt starting. That, you know, that first 30 to 60 to 90 days of training. And to me, it is the most crucial and most important training that horse will have its whole life. You know, it's kind of like the foundation of a house. You can build the beautiful, most beautiful mansion, you know, you've ever seen, but if there's no foundation under it, it's only a matter of time before that beautiful mansion crumbles. And a horse is no different. You know, a horse with a good foundation, no matter what bad habits or issues it may have down the road, you've always got a foundation to go back to and build off of. That's multidiscipline. That's not just with, you know, the Western horses. It doesn't matter whether you have a jumper or a hunter or a dressage horse or a roping horse or a reining horse or a plow horse, for that matter. They're all horses, you know, and they all have such same similarities. And you know, the impression you make on them as, you know, young horses, that's really what carries on throughout their life, regardless of what their, you know, occupation will be, or what event they'll compete in, or what the job will be. So yeah, I guess that's kind of long-winded answer to that one, but kind of how that is for me. So
yeah, no, that's not long-winded at all. That's awesome. I love having conversations, getting to know people, getting to know their why. And
yeah.
So this is awesome. So give it, what did it feel like, or what did you think when the first jumper showed up at your barn, or, you know, a dressage horse, you were asked to help with a dressage horse? Was there a moment of, oh, I don't know, this is different, should I, like, I'll just try it? Or was it something that right. you knew right away, no, I can do this?
Right. Well, so to be honest, by the time I started getting a couple, you know, jumpers and dressage horses and, you know, other disciplines in for training, I had already been, you know, starting young horses for quite a long time. And so even though they're primarily Western horses, I try not to look at it that way. It's a horse, you know, and yes, different breeds of horses have different conformation and, you know, different sizes and, you know, generally different temperaments and stuff. But at the end of the day, it's still a horse, and horses, they learn the same way. So, you know, like I said, it was a bit later in my, you know, training career when these other horses started coming in. And to be honest, I approached them the same way. There was a little bit of, you know, like, I'm not a show jumper, you know, I'm not a dressage trainer, like, I don't want to do anything wrong. But as far as those beginning stages, I just said, you know what? I've worked with enough horses. I'm going to approach it the same way I have with everything else. And because it's the fundamentals, right? You know, they reacted no different than a quarter horse would. You know, it really went just the same for me. So that was the first one that came in. You know, now I've done several, and I still approach it the same way. So
nice. Yeah, and it's you know, like you said, they're all quote unquote just horses. So they do speak the same language no matter yes. what body or job they have.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's very cool.
I think as humans, we differentiate them a bit too much, right? You know, we have these categories in our minds of what these horses are. And we forget about the animal itself a lot of the time. So
absolutely. Yeah. And from my many years of massaging and learning to communicate with them from in that modality, it's the same. Yeah. For me, a horse is a horse is a horse. They come with their own baggage. They come with their own, you know, opinions. Yeah. And it's all about trying to suss that out and develop a relationship.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. Yeah. Build that bond.
Yeah. Yeah. It's absolutely a bond. All right. So can you give me three words that would describe who you are and how you see yourself fitting into the equine world or the equestrian world with what you do with your talents?
Yes. Well, I guess the first word I would say is driven. I'm very, very driven. I have, a real desire to pursue, you know, my knowledge and my skill set in training horses. And I don't know, I'm just very driven to always be looking forward. I always say I'm always looking at tomorrow, right? Like, and always trying to get better. I don't know if it's a healthy thing or not, but I'm never satisfied in a way. You know, I'm always trying to learn what's the next step. So I would say driven. What would be another word? Passionate. I mean, I absolutely love the equine animal. I love working with them. You know, I'm a farrier as well. I like to shoe them. I just like being around them, every bit of it, you know. And I love the connection that can be had there that most of, you know, humans on earth will never realize. And it's a special one for sure. So driven, passionate, and a third one, this is a good question. Got me thinking. I would say understanding. I really try to base my whole training method around understanding the horse, you know, putting myself in the horse's shoes, kind of, as I say. And I always try to go about it from their standpoint. So now, you know, we're humans and we're not perfect. We have our flaws. So I don't always understand them the way I should. Sometimes we let our emotions get in the way, but I always try to approach it with understanding. Yeah.
Nice. There was something that you said, being a farrier, how long have you been a farrier and how much of that is your time and effort as well?
Yeah. So I started shoeing when I was in high school, really. I was doing, you know, co-ops and that with different guys. I've been shoeing since, well, that was, you know, I've been shoeing for, I guess, over 10 years or so now, but I just last fall, I started slowing down on the outside horses and I started focusing a little more so on the training side of things. I kind of had a fork in the road. I had to decide, everything was getting so busy and I had to make a decision, and my true passion and love is to work and train with horses. So I made the decision to slow down on the shoeing side of things. And I mean, I've got enough around here to shoe anyways, so it keeps me busy, but I've got a few local clients still, but just a few. Definitely a good thing to learn.
Awesome. Yeah. You can definitely, especially if you love doing it and it's still like you love to learn, it's still a passion, then you know, it's good. And it is like the world is so crazy busy. You know, we all have so many things on our plate. It is difficult to try to figure out what you want to pare down. No pun intended.
Yeah, it is, you know, and shoeing horses can definitely be a little bit more lucrative maybe than training horses. But I just love training horses. So, you know, that's the route I've chosen, and I'm pursuing it. We're going after it.
Good.
We'll see if it works out, right? Yeah.
Well, as I told you before we started recording, I have found out you have a little bit of a fan club going out there. I didn't even expect some of these people to know who you were. And they're like, oh my God, we love Caleb. So that's awesome.
That's definitely very encouraging to hear. It's always nice. Yeah.
Good. All right. So what are the commonalities that all horses share, regardless of what discipline they are ridden in?
Yeah, a very good question. You know, again, like I said before, we really, as humans, we get in the habit of differentiating all these different disciplines of horses and stuff. And, but like at the end of the day, they're all horses. And I would say that like the most common thing that, you know, it doesn't matter what type of horse you have, every single one of them, in my experience, learns from the release of pressure, you know, and I base my whole training kind of, you know, theory around that. You know, a horse is always looking for a way out. See, naturally, a horse will lean into pressure. You know, you think of a foal when you're trying to halter break it, you know, and you pull forward on the lead line. What do? They instantly, you know, there's pressure on the top of their pole, and they instantly go into that and go backwards, right? And it's our job as trainers to teach them to yield to that pressure, which is, when you think about it, it's actually incredible that the horse will let us do that, because it goes completely against their nature. But every type of horse I've ever had learns from the release of pressure. So, you know, when we have to teach them, you know, we apply pressure when we're trying to ask for something. And when that horse, you know, listens and at the very least tries to do what we're asking, we release that pressure. That's where the horse is learning, not from the pressure being applied, but from the pressure being released at the correct time, you know. And I would say that's probably the most common thing of any horse. It doesn't matter how big or small, or, you know, everything from Clydesdales to minis and everything in between. They all learn at different levels, but they all learn from the release of pressure, in my experience.
Okay. Yeah. Have you trained Clydesdales and minis as well?
No. Well, we have twin daughters. Actually, they're going to be three here in a couple of weeks. So we do have a pony here that we got cheap, and I definitely worked with quite a bit. But never any draft horses, I will say. So
that would be interesting. I love those big guys.
Yeah, for sure. They're pretty neat horses. But I haven't had one of those in yet.
So how does your approach differ, if at all, for horses that come to you that are ridden in the English discipline? So, you know, they're there for the 90 days. Like, how do you introduce them to the work?
Yeah. So again, I really, you know, especially for that, you know, first part of their career, that first 30 to 90 days, I really keep it the same. I mean, you know, the whole deal there is we're trying to create that foundation like we talked about earlier. And I'm just trying to put buttons on that horse. You know what I mean? You know, I call it buttons. You know, you push this button to do this, you push this button to do this. And as long as those buttons are there, down the road, when they go on to their, you know, to their owner or to the competitive trainer who's going to teach them a certain discipline, those buttons are there. Those people can use those buttons in any way they need to. You know, if they, whether they're jumping horses or reining horses, or it doesn't matter. If that horse has been taught, you know, how to have control of its body, then you can then go on and teach it a certain discipline, you know, in any which direction. So I would say, you know, like after that 90 days, when things start getting more specific, definitely, you know, training really, you know, starts getting different there. But for the foundation, I really keep it the same. It's just, you know, a matter of teaching them, you know, most importantly, yield the pressure and, you know, all the little buttons, you know, yield your hindquarters, you know, when I ask, and, you know, all the different things we need them to do for different disciplines. I want them to know it all so they can go on and go in any direction. Yeah.
Okay. So can you explain a little bit more about how you, make these buttons or develop these buttons for these horses? So the majority of my listeners, and I am trying to expand this. So, and you are the first Western guy that's been on this show. So I am so thankful for this, but a lot of listeners are English. So can you share with us, for instance, let's say a warm blood comes in, its job is to be a jumper. How do you take that horse and put those buttons that it might need for the future?
You know, the first thing, I do a lot of groundwork, you know. I do get to riding them quickly. I don't wait weeks on end to ride them. But that doesn't mean, you know, I've cut steps. I'm a major believer in making every step perfect before you go to the next step. So a lot of groundwork, you know, teaching them, you know, to you know, approach me when I need them to go away from me when I ask them to, you know, to yield to pressure, you know, stop, back up, you know, turn around, lateral flexion, vertical flexion. These are all things I try to get before I ever even put a saddle on them or, you know, try to make a first ride or anything like that. And the reason I do that is because then when I do go to the next step, like say putting a saddle on, I've got control of that horse. So, you know, if he gets scared from, you know, the cinch being tight, which they're going to, right? It's something new. It's gonna, you know, I don't know if scare is the right word, but it's gonna, you know, at the very least confuse them. They're wondering, what is this on my back? You know what I mean? And you can't blame them. This is completely foreign to them. But at least when they get that uncomfortable feeling, I've got control of them. They're confident in my ability to have control of them. And so I can, you know, if they want to run off, I can stop them. If they want to, you know, try to buck a little bit or jump around, I can stop them. You know, I have that control. And even further then, when I go to get on that horse, you know, I've got that lateral flexion. If the horse wants to bolt or, you know, hump its back or, you know, jump around or whatever, I can bring its head around. I can move its feet. I can keep, you know, keep it from making erratic movements. You know, and that's the very basics. And then from there, you know, I'm going to, you know, once I'm, the horse is comfortable with me riding and that, I'm going to get more specific, right? And I'm going to ask for, you know, more specific feet placement. And right off the bat, I start working on collection. To me, that horse has got to learn to be collected. Not, you know, people think, oh, it looks so nice when they're collected. It doesn't look good when the horse is rooting their nose up. But there's a reason we collect horses, you know, and you as a, you know, you massage horses, you know exactly what I'm talking about. When a horse is collected, it's engaging all those muscles in its back and its hind end, and it needs those muscles to work properly. And if we never teach them to engage those, you know, we're going to end up with horses that down the road that are sore, you know, and then they don't want to be doing certain jobs because it's so difficult for them. You know, so right from day one, I want to create a really strong and confident horse, you know, both physically and mentally. And so I guess when I say those, you know, I put those buttons on a horse, it's all these little things kind of put together. And over time, you know, the next thing you know, I can get a horse to do whatever I want, you know. But it's definitely, it's not like, you know, overnight, you just put a button on a horse. It's all these little things over time combined together, you know, gives you control of that horse. And all of this is only possible if that horse is confident in your ability and you as a trainer, you know. So we cannot get these results by forcing them on a horse, you know, or by, you know, we kind of have to let the horse think it's their idea. And that's where, again, where those, I go back to those three words, understanding the horse, you know, really trying to approach it from a horse's mindset. So
this is awesome, Caleb. Yeah. And there was something you said. So when you were talking about going back to the first question, you know, you like to develop a foundation and you want to develop a bond. And I'm guessing that as you take this horse through, let's say the 90 days, you are looking to develop, you're asking them to look to you, right? For, yes. You know, affirmation, yep. And validation. And it's like, yep. Yes, you know, we've got this relationship. At what point, yep. And let's say 90 days, yep. is there typically a single point in that span of time where you find the bond and that connection most develops?
Yes, but I will say that's pretty well different for every horse.
Okay.
You know, it very much so depends on, you know, that horse's temperament, that horse's experience, you know, before it's been at my place. You know, what has that horse seen in its life? Has it maybe seen neglect, or has it seen, you know, too much confidence? Maybe someone has let it get away with a lot of things. So it really depends. I mean, and some horses, they latch on to leadership very quickly, like on day one. And other times it seems like, you know, it's a struggle to get them looking to me for direction for the whole first month, you know.
Okay.
But I would say definitely, you know, if I've done my job correctly, definitely after the first month, they're, you know, I've got them looking to me for direction. And unless, you know, there's outside circumstances or something wrong, or maybe, you know, a lot of people always forget, you know, the horse is a living animal, just like us. They're not a machine. So, you know, maybe there's something bothering them. Maybe, you know, they're sore somewhere, you know, I just mean, if they're not progressing at the rate that we'd quite like, we do have to look at all the options. But I would say definitely after a month of work with them, you know, or 30 days, you know, I definitely have them looking to me for that direction. And I always find generally horses are looking for a leader. You know, if you show them true leadership, they will latch on to it, because kind of like a dog in a way, not, you know, they're not exactly like dogs, but in a way they're looking for a leader. But a leader has to lead, not force, you know. So a leader has to say kind of like, come here, follow me, rather than, you know, go do this. So,
and I also feel a leader has to not only like lead, you can't force them, but you also can't, you know, baby them along.
Nope.
Either. Nope.
That's 100% the truth. And I'm very open. You know, I'm not one of these people that will never, you know, hit a horse or anything, because at the end of the day, we have to remember these are, you know, anywhere from 900 to 1500 or heavier pound animals. And, you know, when you really think about it, all it takes is a swipe of the head and they can do some damage, you know, like if they wanted to, they could really, you know, do some damage to us. And so for human safety, we have to make sure that horse respects, you know, its leader. But I also believe that can, you know, that is mostly done through understanding of the horse. You know, we have to correct them when they've done something wrong. But again, the horse is going to learn, just like the horse is going to learn from release, the horse is going to learn more from reward when they do right than from discipline when they do wrong. Again, we still need to discipline when they've done something wrong. But where the real learning goes in the horse's mind is when they get rewarded when they do the right thing, you know? So,
and that comes down to timing, right? Like you've got to be
100%
quick to say good boy, good girl.
Like literally the moment they even think about doing the right thing, you have to reward that. If you stay consistent at that, before long, that horse is going to be, you know, it's going to be searching to do the right thing, because it knows that's where the least amount of, you know, that's where it's going to be in its happy place, its comfortable spot, you know. So, but absolutely, we have to be thorough. We can't let them walk all over us. You know, we have to be, they're big animals, and we have to always keep that in mind, and we have to take it seriously. Yeah.
Well, I know throughout the over 2 decades of my massaging career, you know, I just love to write a book. I'd love to write a book of the stories of not necessarily the massaging, but the relationships that horses, you know, the tough nuts to crack that you really have to develop the trust. And then the ones that, you know, this is my space, that is your space.
That's right. Yes.
All right. So your job, do you find it challenging communicating your technique and approach with people from the English disciplines, even when they seek out your expertise?
So, you know, it's funny, before I kind of started working with horses in the English world, I wondered about that, you know, because we have it so ingrained in us that it's so different, right? There's these stereotypes of English and Western. But again, I go back to, at the end of the day, a horse is a horse, and those fundamentals don't change. Now, I'm not going to direct someone on how to go, you know, run a jumping course, because I would have no idea what I'm doing. But when it comes to the very basics, you know, and horse behavior and how we want that horse to react to certain pressures, I teach them the exact same way I would teach anyone in the Western world, you know. Those basics don't change. They really don't. And it's just good horsemanship. So I, you know, rather than teaching English or Western, I like to say, I just teach good horsemanship, because that goes across the board. Yeah.
So let's say you've got, a person who owns a couple of jumpers and they want to send one of them to you. I was thinking about this earlier. Do you start them off on Western saddles?
I do. If they give me the choice, I do. If they prefer to have it in an English saddle, I absolutely will do that too. Of course, it's the owner's decision. but I'm just used to a Western saddle, you know, and so that's just my go-to. And again, for those basic things, they should be doing the same thing in both an English and a Western saddle. The one thing I do like about a Western saddle is, you know, say if a horse is really kind of spooky or very sensitive to touch, you know, I feel like, you know, you put a big Western saddle on and, you know, I got one that has strings hanging off of it and everything, and it can really help kind of desensitize them without scaring them too much. You know what I mean? You can put a back cinch on and you can do all these things. And, you know, once they get used to that, you put an English saddle back on and they're like, oh, actually, this isn't too bad. You know what I mean? So yes. Yeah. I guess if it's my choice, yeah, I usually just do put the Western saddle on, but I have worked in both for sure.
Yeah. Cause you know, I've had a few clients over the years and that have taken their horses to a Western guy to help them out because there's a little bit of a challenge and yeah, they start with the Western saddle, but it's so funny because there's that, oh, it's not that it's bad, but it's so different from what all these English people think.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're putting a Western saddle on my horse. But then I think like if the horse can handle like the weight, the size, the bulk, and like you said, the different other things you can hang off of it, that yes, that once you put the tiny English saddle on it, it should be a cinch.
Absolutely. There you go. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's exactly right. You know, and I do have one big saddle that I typically start horses on, like with it. But my barrel racing saddles, you know, a lot of them don't weigh a whole lot more than an English saddle, and they're not as invasive, or like, they're just, you know, they're not as invasive as my big saddle or anything. So they're actually quite similar in some ways. A lot of the barrel racing saddles, you know, and a lot of barrel racers will use smaller pads and stuff. But yeah, generally, like in my head, a horse should be able to do, you know, kind of, if you throw it at the horse should be able to accept it, you know, and it's my job as a trainer to help that horse along to accept that. So, you know, I don't want to send a horse home and telling the owner, okay, this horse is trained, but you can't do this, and this, you know, I want to be able to send a horse home and say, you know, drop a bomb beside him. He'll be good to go. He won't, you know, he won't move, you know, ideally that's the goal. It doesn't always quite go that nice, but
exactly.
But yeah. So I would feel bad if I sent the horse home and said, don't put a Western saddle on it. It won't like it, you know? So.
Now, have you ever had the owners of these horses show up and they'd say, okay, can I hop on them the first time while I'm here with you? And so like, do the owners get on them and sort of get a feel like, so you can teach them some of these buttons, or how do you do the transfer, let's say?
So I always encourage owners to come, you know, have a look throughout the, you know, the training process. You know, I'm not hiding anything. And so I actually enjoy it when the owner, you know, if an owner could come out, you know, once every 2 weeks or whatever, that's just lovely to see the progress. But at the very least, I always, you know, I don't demand, but I always encourage the owner to ride with me, ride their horse with me, you know, before they take it home. Because yeah, I don't want to send the horse home and then the owner's, you know, like, oh, what do I do? I want to show that owner exactly what that horse can do and how to go about it. So usually, you know, when they come, I'll ride the horse and kind of showcase what I've done with it. And then I'll ride with, you know, I'll let them ride the horse and we'll, you know, I'll answer any questions they might have, or, you know, I'll just make sure everything's out on the table. So they're not, I don't want them going home wondering anything. You know, the whole idea, the whole reason they sent a horse here is because, you know, they weren't sure what to do next. So I don't want them going home thinking that either. Right. So I try to work with the rider as much as I work with the horse.
Okay. So this brings me to like a question I've just thought of here. So a lot of what you do, and then obviously with a lot of what I do, so we're kind of doing the same thing. We're working with other people's horses. We're communicating with them in ways that are basically ingrained in us, and it's a passion and we're good at it. So are there times, I almost feel like sometimes I'm the psychologist, the horse's psychologist. Yeah. I can pick things up or, you know, maybe trying to make suggestions to the owner, because sometimes, you know, the pair comes to you and there's something not gelling with them. Like, right. Do you ever find yourself trying to encourage or teach the owner how to communicate with their horse?
Definitely, you know, and I have people coming in at all skill levels. You know, I start a lot of horses for other trainers that are going to go, you know, then go on and compete on that horse in various disciplines. And so, you know, those people, of course, you know, they know how I get the horses feeling and they know what they need to do next. And then I have other people that, you know, are maybe newer into the horse world. They bought a young horse and, you know, wanted it trained, and they almost need riding lessons, you know, along with the horse training. So those, you know, those people, absolutely, I'm going to teach them some things and help them, you know, because I don't want them getting frustrated with the horse, and I don't want the horse getting frustrated with them, because that's just a cycle that can just go faster and faster. So, you know, again, yeah, I like to work with the owner just as much with the horse. So I guess the answer to that would depend on the owner's knowledge level, you know, and their comfort level and their confidence level. But
yeah,
I always try to increase their confidence. Yeah.
Yeah. And adjust your approach to what they need, basically.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah, for sure. Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So your job is all about teaching horses, but what are some of the things that you've learned from horses?
The one thing that strikes out is patience. Naturally, I am not a patient person. You know, I think everyone struggles with patience, but definitely me. I am not naturally a very patient person. You know, I like the results. I don't like the process. And that's kind of ironic for a horse trainer to say, because horse training is all about the process. You know, when we get the results, they go away. We don't even get to enjoy it. So, they've taught me patience, you know, and I daily have to work on my patience. It's so easy for the human emotion to, especially when it's an occupation, you know, I love this, but I'm not just doing it for fun. You know, it's an occupation. So it's easy for, you know, everyday stresses and things like that to get involved. But, you know, horses have over the years have taught me just to be patient. You know, when things aren't quite perfect right this very second, you know, don't make a big deal of it. Again, like I said earlier in the interview there, you know, like, think about tomorrow. You know, how do I want this horse to be tomorrow? Do I want to overreact today and have the horse be stressed out tomorrow? Or do I want to be a little bit more understanding today, be a bit more patient, and have a, you know, hopefully a more understanding horse tomorrow? So patience would be the biggest thing. But you know, every horse I get in, I learn something from. There is no two horses identical. Every horse is different. And I think that's what's the coolest thing about this horse training thing is you never perfect it, ever. You know, just when you think you've got it all figured out, you get a horse in that really throws a wrench at you, and you gotta do some more figuring, you know. So it's, you know, it's constant learning in this business, for sure.
And that just helps you get better at what you do. That's
absolutely
so simple. Yeah. And you know, it's funny you brought that up, because back in one of the other questions I asked you, when you said you're always thinking of tomorrow. So it's funny. I absolutely loved your answer that you gave about, you know, needing to be patient and thinking about tomorrow. So I have down here, I wrote a little note, thinking of tomorrow, but are you always present? Like, no, and, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's kind of other side of the coin that you mentioned,
because
the horses, they so teach us patience. So I guess patience, but also being present in the moment and not always thinking tomorrow or 10 strides ahead, right? So it's so challenging.
Yeah, it is, for sure, because you can't just let things slip right now, you know, especially with the young horses. You know, every single day, you know, it's a teaching opportunity. So but I guess it's more so, you know, when I say think about tomorrow, I'm more so thinking about, like, you know, don't get caught up with the little things. Don't expect perfection in one day, you know. Like, there's a common saying, you know, if you gain 1% a day in 100 days, you've got 100%, you know what I mean? So, you know, you're better off accepting the little wins and not, you know, when you get a little win, you know, don't try and make it perfect then, you know, and hey, some days it does go perfect and those days are great, but with horses, not every day is like that, you know, and the days where it seems like you're just not getting anywhere, you kind of have to force yourself to look for the little wins, but you're right. You have to be in the present. You can't just give up either. You have to stay consistent and thorough, but know when to quit and know when to be happy with your result. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're so quick to pick up on our energies. So if you're not present, and like, I remember this was years ago, I was massaging a horse and I was working away on the hind quarter and the horse was just chill, snoozing away. And all of a sudden the amount owing on my student loans went flashing into my head. And this horse literally woke up from a dead sleep, turned around, looked at me, gave me the dirtiest look, like, look, lady, get your brain back where it needs to be. I'm like, wow, that was a huge moment for me. Now, can you share with us an example or a story that is, you know, you have about a horse in a particular instance where they taught you patience?
I think, like, honestly, I would say every horse I get in, I get more patience. but I'm trying to think of one specific one that would make for a good story. I guess I've had several horses that have come in that were pretty well, like definitely not halter broke. You know, you had to pretty well back the trailer up to the barn and open a stall up and hope they go in the stall kind of thing. And when you're used to working with horses that have been raised by someone since they're a foal, you know, and they've, at the very least, their halter broke and, you know, they're used to being around people. Well, now you've got a horse that literally isn't even used to being around people. You really have to be even more patient. You have to start even further back. You know what I mean? You can't just go right into the round pen and start doing groundwork with a halter and lead. You have to teach that horse to how to even accept a halter. So it's like, it's almost like starting, it's tough because it's like starting way behind where you would normally start. And what happens then is as a human, I try to tell myself that at the end of 30 days, I have to have that horse at the same spot as the horse that's already been domesticated a bit more. You know what I mean? And that's just simply not the case. Now, sometimes they'll surprise you and they will learn just as quick or faster. But you can't expect that horse to learn twice as much information in the same amount of time. Now, you know, nowadays, you know, with the amount of performance horses out there, you know, most of the horses I have coming in are, you know, they're performance horses. They're going off to do some sort of discipline. So they've at least been made used to humans around them and they're comfortable with people and they're comfortable to lead or whatever. Most of the horses I get in nowadays are like that, but you know, those ones that are a little more wild, they definitely, you know, test your patience without a doubt. I guess I can't really think of one that stands out outside of all the others. Simple answer would be all of them.
They teach us patience. They teach us how to be humble. It's all one great big package with a bow.
It's a very humbling occupation.
Yes, for sure. All right, so in my previous episode I had Canadian team rider Erin Ballard as a guest, and she had commented about how riders can't show frustration to their horse because the horse doesn't understand that type of energy. In your experience, how do horses respond to our energies and intentions? And how can we find ways to build our relationship with them into something better?
Yeah. And I mean, she hit the nail on the head she hit the nail on the head there. You know, I always say, you know, your emotion goes right through the saddle into that horse's back, you know, whether it be happy or sad or angry or frustrated or whatever. And I agree, we can't show, it's one thing to show a horse that you're not maybe pleased with what it's doing, you know, if it's being bad, but to show frustration, the horse doesn't understand that, especially these young horses that I deal with, because everything I'm showing them is something completely new. You know, the things I'm teaching them, they've never experienced before. And so they're going to get frustrated. And me being the leader, if I'm frustrated, then the horse really is going to get upset, because, you know, the person, you know, or the living thing that they're supposed to look up to, being me, you know, if that leader is, you know, not showing very good leadership and is being frustrated, then the horse just really has nowhere, you know, it really gets confused and really has nothing to base off of. So I think, you know, and that's a very tough thing. You know, as people, we have emotion, you know, and with horses, there's good days and bad days. And on those bad days, it's difficult not to show frustration, because we get frustrated. It's just, you know, unfortunately, it's the way we are. And, you know, we work at it and we get better, but we're not perfect and we do get frustrated. But when we're on the back of a horse or dealing with a horse, you know, I agree, we have to do everything we can to just really not show that frustration, you know, or, you know, we got kind of try to let things go in one ear and out the other, you know, and just let it go. And that's something that I'll forever be working on to get better at, you know, and I think we all need to forever be getting better at it, because it's something we can't ever master.
Yeah.
You know, but definitely, you know, we have to be confident. A horse won't be confident if we're not confident. So,
well, and don't you find too, like, with the life coaching that I do, you know, a lot of people are looking at, you know, trying to build their confidence in different areas of their life. And when you talk about frustration, it's an emotion that, like, is really closely linked to fear.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe not someone like Erin Ballard, who, I mean, we all experience fear, but I mean, if she's flying over a 5-foot oxer, you know, that's one thing. But for your average horse owner, you know, sending a young horse to you, hoping to get it back to develop a relationship, I mean, there's that fear. So, like, do you ever find yourself, I don't know, how would you put that in connection with the frustration? Do you find that a lot of amateur owners have some fear-based issues with their riding?
Yeah, again, you know, it depends on their skill level, how long they've been riding for. Absolutely, you know, again, they're large animals. We forget, you know, those of us that are around horses every day, we kind of forget how, you know, powerful of an animal they really are. You know, and so for someone that's maybe newer at it or is trying to learn, you know, how to ride in that, it's very easy to get fearful. And that is a tricky thing when you're learning, because when you get fearful on the top of the horse, you know, it's like I said, it's going to go right through that saddle pad. And so you say, well, how do you not be scared? You know, if you're a new rider and there's going to be fear, and I agree, there will be fear. I've been scared, you know, every one of us has at one point in time, you know, if we're involved in horses, we've had scary moments. And, but it's in those moments where, and this is, you know, you learn this over time spent with horses, but it's in those moments where you kind of need to put that fear aside. And, you know, I mean, when you're new, it literally, if you actually truly are fearful, sometimes you're better off to step off. Maybe just walk your horse around the pen for a few minutes, you know, and just relax, you know, think about what's going on. Because if we're on top and we're scared and we're tense, and, you know, especially if it's a younger horse or something, maybe that horse, you know, is feeling that tension. Now the horse is tense. I mean, things can go from bad to worse very quickly. Yeah. And the last thing you want to do is have a wreck, because then next time that fear is going to, if there is a next time, that fear is going to be even more profound.
Right.
So, that's definitely a tricky thing, you know, as we learn with horses. But, you know, I would say the best suggestion to that is when there is true fear, just to maybe, you know, step away from the situation a minute and kind of regroup and maybe go back to it, you know, and I do the same thing when I can feel a horse is maybe frustrated or fearful. Okay. You know, if a horse just really isn't getting anything, you know, due to the fact that he's just, you know, confused or scared of something or whatever, sometimes I'll just, you know, go and quit what I'm doing and just maybe just go walk around the rail or something, you know what I mean? Or just let it relax for a minute, you know, or even, you know, if it's really frustrated, I'll get off and, you know, maybe tie it up for a little while, you know, let it stand for a minute, calm down, maybe brush it or something, and then, you know, go back at it and try again, kind of regroup, both for the horse and for you.
those are those important moments to, because some people think, oh, I've got to push through this. I've got to hammer home this point so this horse understands in the moment what I'm trying to teach them. And I think it's, I would guess it's the exact opposite. Take a time out.
Yeah. Just because you are correct. You know, if a horse is doing something wrong, you don't really want to just quit. But if you're trying to teach that horse out of fear, we're not going to accomplish anything. You know what I mean? We have to teach horses with confidence. So, you know, that's where I say, even though we don't want to quit on a horse, sometimes the best thing to do is just take a break for a minute, you know, not quit and put the horse away, but just take a break and reassess, you know, regroup and get back on there and try again, kind of, just because, you know, when we're afraid, you know, when we're truly afraid, there's nothing we can do. We can't just say, oh, I'm not going to be afraid. You know, it'd be nice if it worked that way, but at least for me, I can't just flip a switch and not be afraid, you know? So, you know, that's where it's, you know, in the long run, it's better off to just, you know, take a breather kind of thing.
Well, and I think you've kind of shared something towards this last question here. What are three simple things horse owners can do that will help build that better partnership with their horse?
You know, I would say lead your horse, you know, and I don't mean with a lead line. I mean, you know, with leadership and, you know, and it's kind of that whole mentality of, you know, hey horse, come along with me rather than go do this, you know, or, you know, forcing one. So, you know, lead your horse, encourage your horse, you know, make sure when they do the right things, they know they did the right things, you know, keep them encouraged. And, well, there might be people that are saying there, my horse has too much encouragement. They're too confident. And no doubt there's, I got one in right now and I would say she's too confident, you know? But you still have to encourage them when they're doing the correct things, you know? And if all you ever do is tell them what they're doing wrong, then they kind of get sour, you know? They don't really know what to do right. They know you're trying to tell them something, but they don't know what. So, you know, we need to always be encouraging. And what would be a good third thing? I'm going to use the word understand them. I'm going to use that word again, because I think that's so important. I think it's so easy to, you know, when I watch a lot of people at shows and stuff riding, and we kind of treat these horses as if it's a dirt bike, you know, or a machine or something. And we have to remember that they are a living thing, you know, just like us. And, you know, especially as, you know, like me, a trainer in the performance horse industry, it's easy to see these horses as, you know, just a commodity, you know, or an investment. And they are, you know, because, you know, a lot of the horses we have in here are worth a lot of money. And it's easy to get the business side caught up in it. But if we can go about it understanding the horse itself, you know, we can accomplish so much more, you know. So, and I say, you know, the best way to understand your horse, if you're not sure kind of what I mean by that, is spend time with your horse, you know, just like, you know, a spouse or a family member, you know, you know them so well because you spend so much time with them. You know, it's why a lot of times people think they have friends and then they learn something about their friend and they realize maybe they weren't so much of a friend as they thought because they didn't spend all that time with them, right? They didn't know all the ins and outs. We got to know every in and out of our horse, you know, and the same thing, you know, vice versa, the horse has to know us just as much. So, you know, the more time you can spend with your horse, the better, the more comfortable you can get with your horse, you know, and naturally, if you do that, you will understand your horse more. And when you try to, you know, go about teaching things to that horse, you know, you're subconsciously going to have a better understanding of how that horse thinks just, you know, because of the time you've put into it. So,
wow.
So yeah. Lead, encourage, and,
understand.
Yeah. So
mic drop. I love it when I have these moments in these interviews. That is so awesome. And, you know, I'm sure you and I could have like another hour long conversation just talking about that part alone, because the years I've witnessed relationships, and I'm saying for people who are listening, I'm saying that in air quotes, because they're not. And I know that the horse is not being heard and that they're frustrated, but no one's listening. And I feel like through what you and I do in our occupations, that opens us up to being that person that listens yeah. to them and that picks that stuff up. And I've been in situations where I've maybe made small suggestions to the owner of, you know, maybe when you're grooming, just try, you know, running your hands over their body or taking yeah. some time to get to know them more, talk to them yeah. more. It's crazy. Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah. Like, for you yeah. and I, that kind of thing comes naturally, but in a busy day that you've got to get to the barn and get on your horse, that's that moment where I think that yeah. communication is gone because there's no connection.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, people always ask me, you know, a very common question is like for people that are sending a horse in, there's, you know, they say, how can I prepare the horse for you? Like, do you want me to put a saddle on it? Or like, do you want me? And no, honestly, I don't want any of that stuff. What I always tell people is, you know, spend time with your horse, get comfortable with your horse, get your horse comfortable with you, you know, get your horse comfortable with touching it all over and, you know, just allowing that, not only understanding the horse, but allowing that horse to understand you. And when an owner has done that, by the time it comes to me, I mean, you know, I can really gain some ground quickly because, you know, that horse already has a good understanding that we're not just barbarians trying to force them into things. You know, it's a two-way relationship, you know, and there's give and take. And yeah, that's what I always tell people, you know, just, you don't have to worry about training them or, you know, having them doing certain things when they come here. That's my job. You know, I always say, just build your horse's confidence, spend time with them. Yeah.
Wow. Caleb, this has been an absolute pleasure. I am so
good.
I am so excited for this conversation. You're the first Western trainer, you know, dude that I've had on the show. So yeah, I am so excited. Yes. This is great. And it's, to me, it's about opening communication and removing boundaries. And this
conversation absolutely.
Has been perfect. Yeah. So
good. I'm glad.
Thank you so much. Now, where can people reach out to you? Do you have a website? Are you on Instagram? Is there anything you can share with us?
Yep, for sure. So on social media, you can find us on Facebook at Klingon Quarter Horses. And then on Instagram, you can find me. It's kind of like a personal / business account. It's Caleb HWC. And you'll find, yeah, you'll kind of, I try to do a good job, you know, kind of sharing our journey, you know, along with everyone. I try to post and stuff as often as I can. And, so yeah, you can check those out and, you know, if you ever have a need for horses being trained, you can contact us on there and we sure can help you out.
So. Awesome. So yeah, I'll put all that information. We'll put it in the show notes so people can reach out to you.
Good stuff.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
So there you have it. I have some great interviews lined up for future episodes, and we'll be covering some pretty interesting topics, as always, with the intent to open and engage the horse world on a wide variety of issues. So until next time, keep your eyes forward and continue to hit your stride. To stay current with Hitting Your Stride, subscribe on my website or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. If you like what you've heard here today, make sure you share and leave a comment to help guide future episodes and widen the audience. And be sure to check out social media to keep up to date with Equestrian Elements Life Coaching.